The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at an historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laugh as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. Shout out to our super producers, Casey Pegram, the one and only Max Williams. And you know what? Shout out to everyone who is back to flying the friendly skies these days.
Yeah, I think you and I both took a couple of little jaunts recently. I just got back from Los Angeles, and it's not as scary as I maybe would have thought. Keeping that mask on the whole time, especially on an overnight flight, is a little weird. It's hard to sleep in one of those things.
Mm-hmm. I should say that I went to Philadelphia recently. It was a wonderful trip. Love the city. I'm Ben. You're Noel, and you and I once went to Philly together. Remember that?
We did do that thing, Ben. We did a show with our other podcast, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, at the World Cafe, and it was awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome, and we can't wait to get back on the road soon. Max, have you hopped on a plane recently?
Not yet. I mean, I was planning to get out to Portland. I had a buddy move out there right before the start of the pandemic, and I just love that city. So I was like, oh, man, I'll come see you. And then the pandemic's been going, and then I've been talking to him. I'm like, hey, I'm going to come out soon. He's like, well, I'm coming to Atlanta pretty soon anyways. I'm like, oh, well.
Zero-sum game.
Hey, you come see me here in Atlanta, then I'll fly out to Portland, like, I don't know, with you, and then we just hang out in Portland. I don't know.
I think that's a good nice plan. That's a good plan.
I have a question for you guys. What is the longest you have gone after a flight where your ears didn't pop back? You know what I mean? Like, that thing where you get that muffled kind of like headphones with no music on kind of vibe, and you kind of like, you got this feeling in your jaw, and you're like kind of doing the yawn and trying to make them pop. I have a horror story about that, but I'd love to get y'all's perspective. Ben, how about you?
Let's see. It was a very long flight, either 13 or 14 hours, I want to say, maybe a little more. And it took several days for my ears to adjust. But also, as you could tell just from hearing how long I was in the sky that time, I had a lot going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was like, we're just going to deal with the ear thing later when we get back to regular life, if we make it.
Oh, totally. Yeah. No, I get where you're coming from. Max, how about you? Any long-term ear situations resulting from flights?
Not that I can think of. Like, the longest flight I've ever taken was Seattle to Atlanta. See, I'm afraid of heights and I'm claustrophobic, so flights and I do not get along very well. Like, I'll try to avoid them at all costs, but I would probably say like only a couple hours afterwards, and then it was gone. But it wasn't like it would just go away immediately. It would just like slowly go away.
Well, you, sir, are one of the lucky ones.
What about you, Noel? What's your horror story?
Well, it's, I don't know, it's the horror story, but it makes me think of today's story. This is why I bring it up. I once had a flight, it was like East Coast, West Coast flight, where my ears didn't pop for the whole duration of my visit. And then I assumed, okay, surely on the return flight, having that change in altitude, you know, up and down again, will knock something loose and cause my ears to pop back to normal. But it didn't. And I went a whole week after the trip with my ears still feeling like they were full of like cotton balls. And like you said, Max, it really was kind of a gradual process, but for me, one that was barely perceptible because it was just like, oh my God, is this my life now? You know, today's story is sort of about the opposite, but I couldn't help but think the idea of taking flights to cure deafness around the early 1920s, where flights were still in some ways a novelty and they were used for tricks and, you know, acrobatics and things like that at various fairs. And you had folks doing like all kinds of, you know, death defying stunts. And this literally became a prescription for folks who were hard of hearing or even other maladies that we're going to get into today.
Sure.
And I assume that it had something to do with this like change in altitude, but that's actually the least of what is leaned on, at least in the kind of like conventional wisdom behind all this stuff. It turns out it wasn't really a particularly good method, but it has more to do with like scaring the condition out of you, right?
Right. So I want to step back because we are talking a lot about the condition known as deafness today. And before we get into this attempt to quote unquote cure deafness, we've got to acknowledge that when you're talking about understanding deafness, you have to understand that many people in the community don't want to be quote unquote fixed. This is a pretty controversial issue. And part of it is because some people might look at those attempts, however well-intentioned, as something that is eroding or destroying their community. You can read an excellent article on this in The Atlantic by Allegra Ringo, Understanding Deafness, Not Everyone Wants to Be Fixed. Highly recommended if you'd like to learn more about this. And so the context in which this occurs, as you say, early in the 1920s or so, or early 20th century, the context here is important because different institutions and individuals in the U.S. had attempted to cure or you could say assimilate deaf people. One example comes to us from Stephanie Ann Goldberg, writing for thesmartset.com, where she describes what was called oralism. And this is what I mean by assimilation or cure, the line between those. When oralism, deaf people were forced to speak and lip read rather than to use sign language, like ASL, American Sign Language. So there were also things like putting electricity in people's ears and, of course, more spiritual treatments like praying. But with the novelty of aircraft and the discovery of how air pressure changes can affect people's ears, someone decided to see whether or not there was a way to give people the ability of hearing through exposing them to airplane trips. And it really all dates back to something called the Renz Jr. incident in 1921, right?
That's right. And much of this research comes to us from a fantastic article in Smithsonian Magazine describing this phenomenon of doctors prescribing death-defying flights to quote-unquote cure deafness. And that article was written by the incredibly talented Greg Doherty for SmithsonianMag.com on September 26th of 2017. The event you're referring to, Ben, took place in March of 1921. There was an Army Air Service plane that took off from a military base in Washington, D.C., in one of their airfields. And there were two men on board, the pilot and a passenger, a gentleman by the name of Harry A. Renz Jr., who was 22 at the time. Renz was a veteran of World War I and had lost his ability to speak about 8 months before this flight took place. It's a little unclear in the research and the history as to what caused it, if there was a particular injury that caused it, whether it was tied to some kind of other trauma that he experienced during the war, but it is most likely some sort of result of his service. So the doctors had tried everything to kind of bring his speech back to him. That included some kind of dicey sounding surgeries, like removing his adenoids and his tonsils. Seems like a pretty odd leap there, don't you think, Ben?
Yeah, you get the feeling that maybe they were increasingly moving toward a throwing spaghetti at the wall situation. Right. They wanted this guy, this very young guy, to be able to regain the power of speech, but they weren't sure how to do it. And after exhausting several options, Renz eventually meets a doctor named Charles H. McInerney at the U.S. Public Health Service. And this doctor says, you know what, Renz, I think your problem is psychological, and I'm going to do something a little different. You don't need to take pills or have any more surgeries. I want you to go on a plane. And then he explains this later to a newspaper reporter from the time, detailing the psychological aspect. He says, quote, when the patient feels himself being taken up to 12,000 or 14,000 feet or more, and then suddenly the machine does a nosedive or a loop-the-loop, the sufferer from hysteria is most likely to forget his other troubles. I selected the airplane for my work because it was the most convenient means at hand. The same thing might have been accomplished by tying the patient to a railroad track. Hardcore, whoa. Doctor. Hardcore.
Whoa. So this is literally like, you know, let's terrify this condition out of you, right?
Yeah. He couldn't just like wait around a corner, because that's what he's describing. I guess he really wanted it to feel like a life-threatening situation. And you know what's odd? I don't know if we're going to keep this in this episode. What's really odd is last night, I ate some cheese right before I went to bed at a late hour, and I had this continual long dream of being in an out-of-control helicopter, huh. And I was flying, and I couldn't figure out how to fly the thing, and it was one of those dreams where, do you ever wake up and you fall back asleep, and you're still stuck in the same
totally.
Dream? As one of those. So I'm feeling this.
It's also that classic dream scenario of like being unprepared. Like, gosh, I really should have taken, you know, helicopter pilot classes before entering this vehicle that seems very terrifying and capable.
Why did I not bring a jet, like a parachute for this?
Exactly.
Thing? Like, or
exactly.
A jetpack.
Or like the Far Side says, you know, the fear of going to the lecture and being the only one without your duck. Do you guys remember that clip or comic?
No, but I think I get where it's going. What is the duck meant to be, like some sort of safety blanket? Like what is the, or is that just dream logic? I think it's dream logic.
That's just Gary right? Larson, man.
I love
the
it.
Guy's a yeah. genius. But yeah. but you're absolutely right. Like, this does seem clearly a psychological approach, right? I mean, the guy even uses the H word, which we talked about in past episodes.
Hysteria. That's exactly right, Ben. It probably should be reduced to the H word. Yes. It certainly is a very loaded word, especially when it comes to doctors of this era as well, treating women and using this as a term of abuse almost, in terms of like, oh, she is all in her head. She was just hysterical, the idea of hysterical women. But it can be used for men too, apparently. So equal opportunity kind of gaslighters these doctors were. But, you know, it's really just kind of a more extreme example of the idea of like scaring someone to get rid of the hiccups, you know?
Yeah. I think that's a really good comparison. And shout out to our own Frank Mulheron, who has this very weird trance-like hiccups cure. Mm-hmm. He was on our show earlier. Was Idiomatic for the People?
Correct.
Yes, our four-part series on idioms. So check that out if you want to learn more. But God, what a good comparison, Noel. In Renz's case, this appears to have some sort of efficacy, because, again, as Doherty points out in the Smithsonian, they're only up in the air for about an hour. And when they land, Renz is walking down the ramp. He's getting off the airplane. And his first words were,
I don't know whether I can talk or not. Okay, I'm not laughing. This is obviously great, great
it's
news.
It's okay to laugh. It's good news.
Yeah, but it's like, what? I don't know what happened. Like, okay, so maybe this does point to the lack of the loss of his speech, the Mr. Renz's speech, as being psychological. If surgery didn't do the trick, these weird, irrelevant seeming surgeries didn't do the trick, and then all of a sudden he was just spooked into speaking, I guess. And a big part of this too was that they wouldn't tell the passenger, like, you're in for some crazy, you know, aerial acrobatics. It was just going to be, you know, you're going to go for this flight that we're prescribing you. But really, as we've indicated, the shock and awe of it all really was supposedly what, you know, turn something on or off in the brain. And it would appear that it worked, and the newspapers ran with it.
Yeah, that's the thing. So again, airplanes are nowhere near as common or ubiquitous as they are today, right?
20 years old, roughly, right? I mean, they still were starting to become more mainstream, but they were still somewhat of a fascination. And I do not believe we would have had the type of commercial airline situation that we would know today.
I mean, it's even newer than that. It was the first controlled, like the first powered airplane flights occurred December 17th, 1903. So this is less than 20 years old. What we're saying is, like, with a lot of new emergent technology, people weren't completely sure what it was capable of, you know, and this could be easily misconstrued as a panacea. And all you need is one story that appears to indicate this works. And their sample size is necessarily so low. According to Jennifer Van Vleck, a curator of social and cultural history of aviation over at the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum, she calls it a technological Wild West. Everybody was full of speculation and ideas about what airplanes could do, both two and four passengers.
You know, it's funny, Ben, there was a commercial flight that took place in 1914, but it was very much like a historical situation. It was the world's first scheduled passenger airline flight that took off between St. Petersburg and Tampa, Florida. And it was considered kind of like a flash in the pan. The St. Petersburg-Tampa airboat line, what was called, was considered, it only lasted for 4 months, but it would have kind of paved the way for what we would know today as commercial airlines. But around 1920, that, I think there were some outside of the U.S., but certainly not to the degree that we see today. But you're right, Ben, about Jennifer Van Vleck's comment that this would have been the technological Wild West. Also, you know, clearly the psychological and medical Wild West. So all those things kind of coalesced together to breed this weird kind of meeting of three disciplines. And when this started to hit the wires, it was an absolute sensation because, you know, this was a burgeoning new industry. And hey, if we have another reason for people to get excited about taking flights, we should go for it. Flying Magazine really put out the call to look into this as having, quote, serious therapeutic value. The quote from the magazine is, even from the meager details now available, it seems conclusive that the future in this field holds tremendous possibilities. May we not predict that the aerial sanatorium, and the aerotherapist will yet have their day?
Yeah, you see why they phrased that as a question.
Mm-hmm.
The answer we'll find out is that, yes, you can predict whatever you wish. In this case, your prediction will be incorrect. But let's put ourselves back in this time period in the 1920s. Let's say you're someone who has your own speech impediment, right? Perhaps a stutter, just for an example. And you think, well, if this could help somebody who was mute, this could help them regain the power of speech, perhaps it will help me with my own condition.
Mm-hmm.
And so other patients started with other people who had speech impediments. They started going on airplanes in hopes that it would ameliorate their condition. But then some people who had hearing problems, who were maybe hard of hearing or had some other specific condition, they started noticing this treatment too. And French doctors even got involved.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
If we've learned anything in the process of doing this podcast, just living life, it's that there's always a catch.
So when we heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month if you get a 3-month plan, we looked at each other and we thought, nah, what's the catch?
But here's the thing. In this case, there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online.
Yeah, they cut out that middleman cost of retail stores and they pass those sweet, sweet savings directly to you. We're not joking. We have tried out Mint Mobile ourselves and it's super convenient. And it actually, like, we tried to find a catch and there's not one.
So to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan.
Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women. Tomboy X designs gender and size inclusive underwear and apparel. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at tomboyx.com.
That's right. This was not confined to just the United States. The word got out and French doctors were noticing that past this. Again, this is like, you know, it's one of those things where you can say something happens in this situation, therefore they must be related. It can show kind of the coincidental connection of these two events, but not necessarily causation. And in this case, that ended up being exactly what it was. French doctors noticing that passengers on long airline flights would fall asleep and therefore they thought maybe air travel might be a treatment for insomnia. And that was reported in the Paris News. So very long leaps of judgment being made, you know, noticing something working in one situation and therefore like it might as well, it must be some sort of magical cure-all. So they started to develop a reputation. They actually had a name, even though they were being used to treat other ailments. They were referred to as death flights, to the point where certain stunt pilots, I guess, who were trying to get in on the action, they would hire themselves out for certain events, and they started to add death flights to that list of things that they would do.
Yeah, now you're not just watching aerial daredevils for fun. You're also watching them for a good cause. At least you can see how the marketing works there. A lot of this comes from the work of Dr. Jaipreet Virdi, a medical historian who runs a great website called FromTheHandsOfQuacks.com. And in their research on this, Dr. Virdi talks about the specific stunts these pilots would perform. The pilots would ride to 10,000 feet. They would dive suddenly. They would even have people jump out of the plane in parachutes. And this was often not, this is important to know, it was often not the pilots going, yeah, I don't know, maybe do like a little corkscrew and then tell me how you're, you know, if you feel like you can talk yet. No, these were recommended by ear specialists of the day because they knew that change in ear air pressure can affect ears. But they're just like the French doctors, I think what you're really talking about there, Noel, is correlation versus causation. One does not necessarily create the other. And so they didn't have a lot of data or information that could support this idea of aircraft restoring hearing or even demonstrating any measurable improvement. Like if you did a hearing test before the flight and you did it after the flight, you really wouldn't find much there, or they hadn't yet, to be completely fair. But that didn't stop the news and the media of the time from saying, you know, hey, go look out over the sky of your fair metropolis. There's a death flight scheduled for Saturday or something like that. What we see instead from contemporary media is a little bit of cherry picking, like desperately searching for a story that shows this appearing to work.
Yeah, there's a few. I mean, there are a few anecdotal. We've already heard about the initial case with the World War I vet who said, "I don't know if I can talk or not," which seems like he absolutely could talk because he said those words. But there are several other examples that the press picked up on, and the way they're covered really does indicate that this is like proof positive. This is definitely a excellent method and a way of treating all of these things. So in September of 1922, you had a U.S. report stating that a, quote, hopelessly deaf former soldier named Augustus S. Harris had gotten his hearing back after a pilot took him up to 15,000 feet over the city of Chicago. The Chicago Tribune reported that he had been unable to hear something as, you know, relatively loud, if you put it right up to your ear, as the ticking of a watch. If you stick it right in there, it's kind of hard to miss. But after the flight, he was able to have a phone conversation with his mother, where he was able to seemingly hear just fine. Very close following on this story, we had a Lutheran minister in San Francisco telling reporters that he had had his hearing completely restored after a flight took him up to 13,000 feet. On his doctor's recommendation, plans to take three more flights. And it wasn't even limited to humans. There were some cases of animals being, you know, miraculously cured by these deaf flights.
Yeah. One story that BuzzFeed would have loved to cover if it existed at the time is the story of a doctor who sent his deaf 7-month-old collie puppy up into the sky. And we don't know how the dog felt afterwards, but the owner said, quote, "The dog appeared to hear much better after his exciting trip." And this wasn't some fringe reporting. This was the Associated Press. This got so much press that celebrities of the day started to enter into the conversation. Most notably, perhaps, the famous airman himself, Charles Lindbergh. He hadn't made his name quite yet as one of the age's most famous pilots, but right, he was in the mix.
And what was the deal? The Lindbergh baby? That was a big kerfuffle. I believe was kidnapped. Their child was kidnapped. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that was gonna happen about 10 years later. The 20-month-old son of Charles Lindbergh was kidnapped in March of that year. And
That's right.
Is Perry Mason based on that? The Perry Mason reboot? No, that's just another. That's another child kidnapping. But correct. Do watch Perry Mason if you get a chance. It's very well done.
It is good. It's a super well-crafted, like, noir, and the set building and world building of it is fantastic. But Lindbergh, you know, you're right. He went on to become probably one of the most famous aviators in American history. But at the time, he was just kind of trying to make his way by, like we were saying earlier, doing these kind of events, I guess, or like, you know, fairs and carnivals. And he had business cards that said, quote, "Fair and carnival exhibition work offering plane change in midair." It's exactly what it sounds like. Literally hopping from one plane to another. Wing walking, also what it sounds like. Parachute jumping. Breakaways, which is where I believe you'd have like a ladder or some sort of rope hanging from the bottom of a plane and you'd climb out of the cockpit. Remember, these are like open cockpit planes, and climb down and I guess have a co-pilot piloting while you dangled there. Something called night fireworks, which I imagine is what it sounds like. Smoke trails and deaf flights. I wonder if he penciled that in at the end because it was such a new phenomenon, right?
Perhaps, yeah. Or maybe it's got the honor of being the last thing with the "and," because that's one thing he really wants to stay with people when they read the card. But yeah, these are impressive and in some cases incredibly dangerous stunts. A biographer of Lindbergh named A. Scott Berg has done some deep digging on this and looked into Lindbergh's correspondence, and he found in a letter to Lindbergh's mother, the aviator describes the ins and outs of a deaf flight. He has one client who's been hard of hearing or partially deaf for about 3 decades, and he says the following: "I took him up 7,400 feet, he thinks 13,000 feet, and brought him down in a 28-turn spin. He was sure sick and couldn't hear as well as before, but the next day, his hearing was noticeably improved." What's interesting about this is it already seems pretty unscrupulous, right? Because Lindbergh's admitting to lying to this
guy. I was about to ask. Yeah, why? So he's saying the doctor prescribed 13,000 feet and he only took him to 7,400 feet. Why would he do that? And why the discrepancy? It's very, very unusual. Because most of these quote-unquote prescriptions that we're hearing and a lot of these tellings from these pilots usually involve going up to, you know, double digits at the very least.
Yeah, and as we look into the nuts and bolts of these flights, what we see is it's almost like a roller coaster is therapy. Like you could have sent somebody to an amusement park and they were capitalizing on the fascination with and fear of this new technology. These flights were almost like roller coasters would be one good example. A haunted house would be another good example. You were supposed to be freaking terrified the entire time, right? Spins, nosedives, they're doing loops. You know, if they're really trying to scare people, they could do the one thing that happened to me, which I still don't know. I don't know whether this was a prank or whether this was just an accidental hot mic situation. One time I was on a flight where I was going to Central America. There was a sudden dip as we're flying in and the pilot gets on the mic and is like, you know, everybody knows the stereotypical pilot voice. You know, it's like, a little bit of turbulence, flying in winds to the northwest.
Why do they all sound the same? Do they take a class? Is it part of their training to like talk as like innocuously as possible? Is like
here's what happens. He goes, cross check, unclear. All right, should have you down in about 25 minutes. Uh-oh. And then he says, uh-oh, and he just leaves it off. The flight went fine, by the way. It was just a little turbulence, which is not uncommon. And I don't know why, like, what happened in the cockpit that made him sign off with uh-oh. But I still think about that guy.
Oh, you, oh my God. Yeah, that would not, that for certain people that have, like, phobias about flying, like, what's the uh-oh? What? Like, I would have gotten out of my seat and, like, you know, like, asked for some assurances. But, you know, like we said, these results were, we have several examples of miraculous cures. We've got Wrens. We've got the two cases we talked about. We've even got the Collie, which, by the way, the Collie was the grandson of Calvin Coolidge's White House Collie, according to this article in the Smithsonian Mag. I thought that was a fun little detail, completely irrelevant to the case, but worth noting, I suppose. So we start to see that this is probably not the mystical cure-all that it's being made out to be relatively quickly. I mean, it was a very short-lived kind of like fad, I guess, this whole thing. So I imagine people started kind of realizing, A, it was very expensive. Lindbergh would get $50 for one of those flights, which inflation calculators to... Boop, boop. Beep, boop. $700. American dollars, and which is, you know, no small change for someone just trying a shot in the dark, you know. But I guess if there's hope, then probably worth it. But it starts to feel a little bit huckstery, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's something that it's similar to what we've run into with episodes on faith healing. When I was working on that for Stuff They Don't Want You Know, one of the things that we found is that people can at times feel temporarily healed or cured because they are in an environment that makes them perhaps feel peer pressure, perhaps unconsciously nudges them to truly believe that something has changed when it has not. And then later, you know, after the rush of not dying in a plane crash wears off, a lot of people found that their conditions had not noticeably changed. And other papers started reporting on this. The magazine Variety told a story, anecdotal, about an acrobat who claimed he had regained his hearing after a flight, but then a little bit later, he lost it again because a car near him backfired. In the case of Wrens, who was unable to speak and then was able to speak after the plane flight, this improvement appears to have only lasted about 4 days. And 6 weeks later, he goes to more and more specialists, and he decides that he's going to try this flight treatment, this aerotherapy, one more time. And now we know that the second time, he also appears to have been able to speak afterwards, but there's no record of how long this lasted. So hopefully it lasted for the rest of his life, but the truth is, we just do not know.
We don't know that, but what we do know is that this relatively short-lived fad did have a pretty definitive end point, and it was as a result of some tragic events that took place.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women. Tomboy X designs gender and size inclusive underwear and apparel. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase, only at tomboyx.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring, and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
In April of 1928, a professional pianist in his mid-40s who was concerned that he was losing his hearing. It's obviously a very important thing to have if you're a musician, you know, whether a singer, like you can't really, it's hard to have pitch, you know, if you can't hear. Obviously, we know that Beethoven made a pretty good go of it, but it's certainly not optimum if that's like what you're doing and you're a teacher or a composer. So this individual decided to go for a round of aerotherapy, and unfortunately was killed in Eureka, California, when the plane that he hired did one of those super severe nosedives, and it caused one of the wings to collapse. And I just want to make sure everyone remembers that a lot of the planes that were being used in these types of, you know, kind of flying circus type events or these like stunt routines in the 1920s would have been the kind of planes that you think of when you think of like the Red Baron and like Charlie Brown. Kind of these like biplanes, I guess you'd call them, with the stacked wings, you know, and oftentimes they were made with kind of like almost, they were, you know, had a foundation, I assume, that was made of steel or metal of some kind, and all of these wires, these kind of tension wires that were keeping the stress evenly distributed. And I think sometimes the wings were even covered with like a, almost like a tent type material, like a, not burlap, but some sort of like heavy fabric like that. And so I can imagine that, you know, these were very, very dangerous maneuvers. And in fact, there's an article I found on history.net called Flying and Dying for Hollywood in the 1920s, all about these intrepid, you know, stunt pilots that were referred to as barnstormers and how many of them lost their lives. It was a very, very, very dangerous business.
Yeah, for a specific example, one of the most notable planes of this era would have been the Spirit of St. Louis, which is one of the most famous planes Charles Lindbergh flew. It was a Ryan M2, and they look like how you described, Noel. They're like a fixed monoplane. The Spirit of St. Louis was mainly notable for its pilot and the extra fuel tanks that took up most of the cabin. But yeah, you're right. In plane safety and aviation technology has advanced so quickly since 1920. And again, we have to remember during these stories that we're looking at an industry and a technology that is still in a very real way in its infancy. And another tragedy occurs. You can read about an airplane accident involving a six-year-old boy who was hearing impaired. This bad press, these tragedies, coupled with the lack of real significant quantitative proof of efficacy, they contribute to the decline of the FAD. Various organizations and experts are starting to look more closely into the treatment. They're saying, hey, airplane rides may be fun, but you shouldn't assume there's any science behind the claim that they can cure, you know, all these different conditions. As a matter of fact, the Journal of the American Medical Association called it, quote, usually futile and often fatal. It's not a glowing review.
No, it wasn't a glowing review at all. And there were even situations, I believe there was a case where a gentleman had a stutter of some kind and other speech impediments that we talked about where it actually caused his stutter to worsen, you know? Ooh. So it turns out that sometimes if you have a psychologically driven condition that's scaring the absolute crap out of you and putting you in a life-threatening, traumatic situation might actually make things worse.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And this leads the overall press to become increasingly skeptical, as you said. And then also, stunt pilots have found other ways to make a little cash, right? Especially when the post office starts using private contractors to carry air mail. And that used to, once upon a time, be something only the military could do. So now people aren't trying to make a buck off this pretty unscrupulous practice. But still, people were still trying it for a while because there were people who had children that were hard of hearing or hearing impaired, and they wanted those children to hear. And, you know, if your child is suffering from something, or if you feel that they are suffering from something, then there's nothing you wouldn't do to help your own kid. So that kind of explains why these continued despite the lack of scientific evidence.
That's true. But even the deaf community, or at least, you know, one of the primary journals or publications surrounding them, the Deaf Mutes Journal, really took issue with this pretty, you know, iffy and dangerous method of potentially, quote unquote, curing their children of deafness. And they wrote, or the publishers of the Deaf Mutes Journal wrote, that the parents are, quote, more to blame than their deaf children. And if any catastrophe results from stunt flying, the responsibility is largely theirs. We also saw just a general turn from the press. You know, there's a really great line, I believe, in the Smithsonian Mag article that we cited earlier, calling some of the journalism around it like aw shucks, or like gee whiz kind of headlines, you know, the idea of like this novel new thing that's taking the world by storm, you know, and just as quickly that crowd can turn on you. And they certainly did. And they became much, much more skeptical and looking more at the science or lack thereof to back any of this up. And we're printing, for example, in a column from the 1930s called How's Your Health? The New York Academy of Medicine wrote that an experiment that took place in Newark, New Jersey, involving six adults chosen from 60, like a cohort of 60, that four of them, two men and two women, had deafness, while the other had a middle ear disease. And the sixth subject was a man who stuttered. The column reported that after the flight, as I mentioned before, the gentleman who stuttered, his stutter had worsened, as had the middle ear case, which makes sense considering what we talked about at the top of the show, because a middle ear issue that could certainly be exacerbated by what, you know, the whole, like, you know, changing in fluid distribution in your ears that happens when you go up to, you know, 20,000 feet or 30,000 feet.
Oh, I've got an answer for that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's save it till the end.
Yep.
But yeah. This is all true. It's all adding up. It becomes, after a point, inarguable.
Oh, the deaf person showed zero improvement, by the way.
Right, exactly. And so eventually, these reports cause a person named Lieutenant Colonel Levy M. Hathaway, the chief medical officer of the Army Air Corps at the time, to ask a question that I feel like many of us have been wondering throughout the course of this episode. I certainly have. How could flying be beneficial for hearing impairment when flying in general is very bad for your hearing at this time over a long, you know, over a long period of exposure? The noises are crazy. You're changing altitude and therefore atmospheric pressure pretty often. If you do this at certain extreme thresholds, this can burst your eardrums. And there's no, like, not only is there no scientific basis for the idea that an airplane flight can cure hearing impairments or speech impediments, but in the case of hearing, the opposite is true. In an airplane, especially, like, imagine you're in an open cockpit airplane, and that's your job. You're a pilot. The ear protection technology at the time is not super advanced. Over time, it would be like being a drummer in a rock band, right? In the 60s or 70s. Eventually, the odds are stacked against you in terms of keeping your hearing in top shape.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty much what we indicated just from our own anecdotal experiences with going up and down in airplanes. It certainly can cause problems. And I'd love to, I can't wait to hear your explanation for that weird inner ear phenomenon that we experience when our ears pop or don't pop or maybe never pop again. God forbid. But let's not forget about our buddy Charles Lindbergh. You know, after his time as a kind of like almost like a flying circus performer and aerial stunt pilot, he went on to make a legendary flight, long distance flight between New York and Paris, May of 1927. So he was kind of done with all of that stuff he did in his previous life. So there were definitely gonna be no more deaf flights for him, in addition to, you know, the whole, what was it, dangling from a rope underneath the plane. That sounded like absolute nightmare fuel. But he became an absolute national hero. Mental Floss has a really great article, if you're interested, in about Charles Lindbergh and his life and some fascinating facts that you might not know about him, written by Jake Rawson. And one of those facts is this, the thing that we alluded to at the top of the show. His infant son was kidnapped in 1932, and that case remains one of the most kind of head-scratching, unsolved true crime stories of the early 20th century.
Yeah, and here ends the tale of plane flights to cure these conditions. Luckily, we know that there aren't unscrupulous pilots out there promising to cure things they can't cure these days. But if you were like many of the other millions of people getting back on the road, traveling for work, traveling to see family, or just taking a vacation, then you are going to run into an ear pop situation. And a lot of people know the regular cures for this. The idea that you need to talk or yawn or chew gum, things that move your jaw to pop your eustachian tube, that's legit. Sucking on candy could also work, or, you know, drinking something, the act of swallowing. Other people will say you can try a nasal decongestant to offset swelling that might occur. But then there's the one I always thought was so risky. I knew this for years. I didn't know the name of it. Have you guys heard of the Valsalva maneuver?
No. Tell us about it, Ben.
It sounds like a post-rock band, but it's where you pinch your nose shut, and then you suck in your cheeks, and while your cheeks are still sucked in, you blow air out.
Mm-hmm. I tried that, Ben. I tried that. I tried them all. How about jamming Q-tips in your ear holes? Not good, right? Definitely avoid those.
The official Q-tip stances, those things don't go in the ear hole.
At all.
But,
yeah. But no, I definitely did that. What has it been? The eustalsis method?
The Valsalva maneuver.
I don't know. I just made up a word. Eustalsis. That's what I'm going to call it from now on. No, I definitely did that. I was desperate and it didn't work. I could kind of, you know what it would do that was maddening, Ben? It would pop back for a second and then return back to its muffled nightmarishness. It really was. I was concerned, like, did I do permanent damage to my hearing? This is a time where both of us were taking regular flights quite a few times a month. To your point, I think all that going up and down and up and down really can do a number on you. I'm surprised that there's not more information about, like, how just taking commercial flights. I mean, I know they pressurize the cabin. It's certainly different than being open, in the cockpit like you would in these stunt flying days, but it still can't be amazing for you.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's not so much the maximum altitude. It's how much your altitude varies across. I don't know why I'm doing miming these gesticulations for you guys. This is an audio podcast, but it's how often it changes. You get it, Max. It's how often your altitude changes in the course of the flight. With that, we hope you enjoyed today's show. We'd love to hear your tales of ear-popping flights. Go ahead and drop us a line on Ridiculous Historians, which is our Facebook page. Thanks, as always, to Max Williams. Thanks, as always, to... Let's see. Let's put Jonathan Strickland in the front this time. I wonder, he flies a lot.
He does. He also just had a birthday, and I commented on his Instagram post, and an intrepid listener accused our rivalry of being fake. And let me tell you, there's nothing wrong with a little cordiality, even among the most bitter rivals.
Yeah.
So it's like the rules of engagement in warfare. You know, you got to have some kind of, this is what separates us from the animals, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I texted him. I said he had a good run.
Did you put any heavy passive aggressive punctuation in there, like a period at the end of a text?
Is that heavy?
To me, it is. I don't know why. Maybe I'm the only one. But whenever someone like punctuates a text correctly, it ends it with a period. I think they're definitely mad at me.
I appreciate it. I think they're going out of the way, But I can see text messaging itself is weird because you're removing two of the biggest components of human communication, which is intonation and body language. So it's very easy to misread, but we don't have to worry about that because odds are one way or another, no matter where we go, no matter where we fly, the Quister will run into us again soon, won't he?
He sure will. So, thanks to him for that, I suppose. And happy birthday. Huge thanks to Max Williams, Alex Williams, who composed our theme, Christopher Hasiotis here in spirit, Eve's Jeff Coates, doing great things out there in the podcast world. Check out J.Ill, the podcast, the show which she is very hands-on with as an executive producer.
And the last shout-out I'd like to give today is to the amazing flight crews, the pilots, the attendants, the people on the ground getting us into the sky, especially flight attendants. You have to put up with so much. If you're on a flight soon, folks, please just give those people some slack. They're working hard in crazy circumstances.
Totally. And don't die on the hill of wearing the mask on the flight. It's not about you. Just do the thing. It's not going to be forever. It's uncomfortable for everyone. But yeah.
Bring them snacks. That too.
We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Tomboy X, the queer-founded clothing line that's inclusive and sustainable. Underwear, swimwear, and more for all bodies. So you can feel good about protecting the goods. Use the code IHEART to get 20% off your first purchase, only at TomboyX.com.